Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Kozura, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 97. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Kozura, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Wednesday, Steelers Nation. Dave, how you doing? It's warming up in Pittsburgh. A little rainy today, but I think we're basically out of winter, fingers crossed.
Yeah, does it sound like you guys had that brutal of a winter up there this year? And it feels like spring's about to sprung, and what we spring ahead, don't we? Daylight savings time, isn't that this weekend?
Sunday.
So we spring ahead on the clocks and all like that. We got we'll spring ahead into the start of the new league year next week as well. Let's see. Today is Wednesday. Tuesday was franchise tag day across the NFL, and there were several of those handed out. And now we get ready for the countdown until the to the tampering period starts on Monday there. So it feels like there might be a little lull here for the next few days. But let's see. On Friday, I think we're planning on having our roundtable combine wrap-up show. So that'll keep us busy there. And then obviously next week get into free agency and start the new league year.
It is the calm before the storm. It was a very busy day for the NFL yesterday, less busy for Pittsburgh. Of course, there was nobody they were even considering or debating franchise tagging, but that was active around the NFL. And some of that has an impact in some form on Pittsburgh. Some releases as well that also I think we'll talk about in relation to some players now, free agents that could interest Pittsburgh, which they could sign right now if they wanted to, because they've been released or once they are officially released by their respective teams. But where do you want to start here, Dave? Do you want to kind of go through just the NFL news of the day in terms of the franchise tag and some of those things that may impact Pittsburgh?
Yeah, let's start first and foremost, go over the list of the franchise and transition players named around the NFL this period here. It starts and you know, you got two teams in the division that have franchise players. Now these are non-exclusive franchise designations, which is pretty standard. There was one transition tag used, and that was the New England Patriots on safety Kyle Duggar. So what that means with the transition tag is, you know, Duggar can talk to other teams, and other teams can submit offer sheets to him. And if he signed, the Patriots will have the right to match the offer, but they will not, if they lose him, they will not receive any compensation as part of that. So Kyle Duggar was the only transition player, tag player. You don't see that transition tag used very much these days, but this is a kind of a rare example of that. And probably not surprising that it would be a position like safety, something that's kind of a position that's kind of tampered down, muted down a little bit as far as average yearly value goes. The franchise, the non-exclusive franchise tag players around the league, the Baltimore Ravens and Justin Madubuike, Carolina Panthers and Brian Burns. I know there was some discussion about people kind of wondering whether or not Burns would get that that tag or not, but he got it. No surprise, Jalen Johnson, the cornerback for the Chicago Bears, got tagged. You could see that coming as far back as late last season with him. I know several fans of the Steelers were hoping that Johnson somehow, some way would maybe hit free agency or potentially end up with the Steelers, but it just doesn't seem like that's going to happen. And further evidence of that by the tag. T. Higgins with the Bengals. I was a bit surprised by this overall, you know, dating back into late last season there, especially with the, you know, with all the people that they're trying to, you know, had to get paid over there in Burrow and Chase and all like that. But I mean, you know, you find a way to keep your good players, and it seems like they're on process, at least to attempt to do that by tagging T. Higgins. It will be interesting to see if they can work out a long-term deal with him moving forward, or if they need to kind of tag and trade him. I'll be surprised if they don't work out a deal with him at this point. Michael Pittman, the wide receiver with the Colts, got tagged. Linebacker Josh Allen with the Jacksonville Jaguars got tagged. Legarius Sneed, we've known that tag has been coming from the Kansas City Chiefs for a little while. And then Antoine Winfield, the safety for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 franchise, non-exclusive franchise player tags and one transition player tag.
Yeah, good recap there, and we'll see if there are any tag and trades, which is also rare, but that's been speculated about T. Higgins and even more so about Legarius Sneed, where I believe the Chiefs have explicitly said, given Sneed's camp permission to seek out a trade. Will that happen? Who knows? Some people, of course, can mention Pittsburgh in that looking for a corner. We find that unlikely based on the cost of the tag initially, the long-term deal, the compensation required to get somebody like Legarius Sneed, but from a tag standpoint, that probably is the most interesting aspect of that in relation to Pittsburgh.
Well, you want to talk about monumental historical thing happening with the Steelers if they were to do something like that. That's why it's, you know, when you look at the history, and yeah, we realize Omar Khan still fairly new and setting his course and all this. But all that said, it would be pretty phenomenal if the Steelers did something like, you know, trading for a tag player and then working out a very, very lucrative long-term deal with them. That's why we don't think it's going to happen.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
It wouldn't hurt our feelings if it happened, but just don't think it'll happen.
Sure. Sure. Also, and this will be probably more down the road for Pittsburgh, but there was, I don't know if it was official, but at least reported that one fifth-year option was picked up yesterday. That's the Dallas Cowboys. Micah Parsons, no question about whether or not they wanted to retain him. I imagine they'll probably work out a long-term deal before that fifth-year option ever becomes something that Parsons plays on, but just something to think about because it seems like teams are starting to, you know, make decisions on fifth-year options, and for Pittsburgh, they'll have one on Najee Harris.
Right, and we got, what, I think we're around, what, 2 months away from the deadline from that, so I would imagine several teams, including the Steelers, will drag their feet a little bit when it comes to that decision, just to, you know, make sure nothing happens in the meantime. I mean, there's no, as long as you get it done by the deadline, you know, some can read into it, well, them not coming out early and standing, you know, and going ahead and getting the process done, you know, leaves, you know, it can be read certain ways, but I mean, the Steelers have usually wait up until kind of the latter parts of the deadline to announce whether or not, you know, for all we know, they might be trying to work out, you know, an extension with him, you know, so that, you know, that could be part of the decision as well. That would be rare if they did that. I mean, you go around the league in general, it seems pretty rare that a team works out a long-term extension with a player set to receive maybe a fifth-year option decision, although you go back to Christian McCaffrey a couple years ago when that happened there that we previously talked about. But I wouldn't expect any news on Najee Harris and the decision from the Steelers for at least several more weeks.
Sure, and that deadline is May 2nd, so as you said, probably closer to that deadline than sooner, but just want to note that as well, just something to think about because the NFL is starting to make some movement in that regard. Some players released. That was a very busy day for NFL players getting cut, in addition to the ones who are franchise tagged, and a couple in particular stick out. Russell Wilson will be released, I guess not official. It'll be done by the start of the new league year, but it's been announced by the team themselves that they will be releasing Russell Wilson, and he's been now allowed to speak with other teams with that news and move coming. So again, I'm not too interested talking about quarterbacks too much, but
oh, come on, you don't want to who hasn't chimed in on this at this point yet with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins? Oh man, the list goes on and on there. Yeah, let's try to do the best we can to kind of avoid talking about all the quarterback stuff today.
Sure, but I do want to mention that because it is actual news that is occurring as opposed to speculation. Wilson is being cut. He can't talk to other teams. And I mean, his price tag will be lower than other quarterbacks, obviously, because of the offset language with Denver, where they're going to be on the hook for all that money. Not somebody that I'm particularly interested in bringing in if I'm Pittsburgh. You know, his play is declining. There's too many negative plays. He's been sacked 100 times the last 2 years. You know, it's a 1 year move potentially. How much does it move the needle? Do you get better with Wilson in the short term? Yeah, maybe, but for how long? And then what do you do in 2025 and beyond? Even with the cost, I don't see it happening.
I think the most fascinating thing with this, with Russell Wilson is, will he actually sign for the NFL minimum, for his, credited seasons and veteran credited seasons and all. And, I realize that would help the new team out. And you'd have, I wonder what the NFLPA stance on that has got to be. Go get as much money as you can to help the average yearly value, right?
It's an interesting situation because it's one we don't see too often. Here's my thought. I've been a little skeptical for a while that he would, because let's say, I assume Wilson would like to ideally play beyond 2024, correct?
I would like to I would think so.
And so if he takes the minimum this year, he's now kind of setting his value for 2025 in terms of, well, you played for the minimum this past year. How about you play for 10 million, you know, something like that. And in some ways he might hurt his own leverage in the future. I'm just speculating, but I think it's consideration there.
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, if indeed he is wanting to play for multiple years, then you need to try to secure your future as best as you can. So that means, now look, you know, it doesn't mean that teams can't set the first year salary super low and then, you know, have an option, bonus in there. But long story short, I am watching closely just to see what this contract, wherever he lands with, looks like. And if indeed it's a 1 year minimum contract, mm-hmm. That'd be a question for Joel Corey. I wonder what the NFLPA thinks about this on their side, even though he's got all this money coming, you know, still coming from the Broncos there. You'd have to still think that they would push for players to get as much as they can in each contract.
I guess, although I'm sure, I mean, the argument is Wilson, I'm getting paid either way. It just depends who's it coming from. But I think there are more implications longer term than just take a 1 year deal minimum and forget about it. I don't know if it's that simple in Wilson's mind. And I think there's a good case for it to not be that simple.
Okay.
All right. Moving on from that, Jerome Baker, I think most interesting name that could intrigue the Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker from the Miami Dolphins, was released, although with a failed physical designation, which we'll have to talk about as well. But the Dolphins could not agree upon a restructured contract with Baker. And so now he has been released by the team. Pittsburgh had interest in him coming out of Ohio State. They were at his pro day, had a meeting with him. Don't believe it was officially a pre-draft visit, but I'm sure pro day dinner and talk to him quite a bit there. He's still relatively young, ton of starting experience, good production overall. That is a name to watch for a team that, as Omar Khan said, they have to address the inside linebacker position.
Yeah, and if they if they're unable to do it, or if they, in addition to that, addressing the position in free agency, you know, it still would not prevent them from addressing the position in the draft at some point if they wanted to. Overall, Josh Carney wrote up an article about Baker yesterday, and it seems to be pretty well received overall. The aspect of, and we didn't find out until a couple hours later in the day, once the transaction became official on the NFL sheet, that he did fail the physical, probably overall not shocking. It's just process overall, because he had wrist surgery back in what, January?
Yeah, I'm trying to look up right now, but
I think it was early January or something like that. So odds are probably he's not completely healed from that wrist surgery. And if that's the case and cannot pass an exit physical, then the process is to list him as being released with a failed physical that way. I have not heard, or in quick research, I have not found anything where they think, oh, this is going to be something that, you know, is going to hinder him all off season and all like that. It's just He's got to still recover from, you know, however much time he has left to recover from the wrist surgery there. So I just think that's part of process of listing him with failed physical being this close to him actually having surgery on that wrist.
I just pulled up an article from earlier today, and I believe Drew Rosenhaus went on a radio show, who's Baker's agent, and said about Baker's release, quote, "We wouldn't be having this discussion," and an ad just popped up, so we close out of the ad. "Quote, we wouldn't be having this discussion had it not been for the knee injury that Jerome suffered when his teammate ran into his knee and he sprained his MCL in the Commanders game, and certainly the injury that he suffered against the Bills with a dislocated wrist." And so it sounds like there's a knee MCL sprain and a wrist injury. I don't know. Probably the wrist was more recent and potentially more longer term in terms of healing. But Rosenhaus says that, you know, he's going to heal and really good player, Walter Payton Man of the Year, and he should bounce back. So that's, of course, the agent doing his agent thing. But to confirm that, yeah, wrist and a sprained MCL.
Okay. I mean, here we are early in the offseason. You would think he's going to be able to, or, you know, and according to Drew, then get past these injuries here. He was scheduled to make something like, what, 10-something million in 2024. Obviously, the Dolphins were trying to restructure that down. That's not going to be his going rate at this point. So his value, I mean, it's hard to know exactly, but I would think somewhere around $5 or $6 million potentially. And the Steelers could obviously swing that, as you noted to kind of kick off this segment here. It's not hard to draw the links to the Steelers in the pro day and Ohio State players. And Baker played with the Landon Roberts at Miami. So Landon Roberts can vouch for this guy. Who, as you mentioned, you know, seems to have a strong character. I think it could just come down to money and interest here when it comes to the Steelers. So I think it's somebody that's and here's the other thing, him being a street free agent, you don't have to worry about any compensatory value or anything along those lines that comes with it. So he is that is on the sheet now, so he can officially start getting a jump on free agency. So I would not be surprised to see the Steelers be interested in him.
The only thing that could delay is that health, because he's got to pass a physical for you to sign him. And so if he was released with a failed physical, now physicals, you know, team doctors can have different interpretations. One team can pass, one team can fail, but there may be some waiting period on that with Baker. But yeah, it makes sense. 27 years old, 82 career starts. I think they want guys that can create splash plays. He can do that. He can rush the passer, 22 and a half career sacks, had 2 picks last year, a couple of pass breakups, a couple of tackles for a loss. So, I mean, you guys have known my stance on, you know, not signing this revolving door up for agents, and somebody with some injury background isn't a great sign for a room that was ravaged by injuries last year. But I think you can look past that and just assume they were freak things and plenty of time to recover. So, again, don't know what'll happen. It's a really good inside linebacker for Asian class. There's a ton of names out there that could be considered, but Baker, I think, will be one of them.
Yeah, and if he can deem himself healthy, there will be some interest around the league, you would think.
Sure. So that is the news on Jerome Baker. We'll keep an eye on it and see if that happens. Also, by the way, Jonnu Smith, who we talked about a couple weeks ago when the Falcons released him, considering his connections with Steelers OC Arthur Smith and their time in Tennessee and last year in Atlanta. Smith had taken a visit to Miami, was in contract negotiations per Adam Schefter, and so doesn't look like Jonnu Smith will come to Pittsburgh. We knew it was possible based on the connection, but the fit never really made a ton of sense in terms of what his role could be in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I would imagine he's going to have that won't be his only visit and all. So going to be interesting to see what happens with him. The Seahawks dumped a couple of veteran safeties yesterday.
They did, in Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs. Big housekeeping there under new head coach Mike McDonald. So a lot of moves being made, kind of a new regime in the sense of you had Pete Carroll running that team for well over a decade, I think it was. So big changes there. So yeah, it was Diggs, Adams, Will Dissly released as well. Dave, you had written about Jamal Adams potentially making sense as a strong safety option in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, only if the price is right, because this is a guy that's played, 11 games, I think, in total over the course of the last two seasons. But if you want to circle back and say, what kind of guys do the Steelers normally go after in free agents when it comes to veterans? It's guys with pedigree. It's guys that they've had interest in dating back to their pre-draft process. Remember, Mike Tomlin was at that LSU Pro Day numerous years ago when Adams was coming out ahead of that draft. They knew at the time that they would not be able to draft him, that he would go way too early when they picked. But even so, this is a guy that Mike Tomlin has talked glowingly about in press conferences ahead of the Steelers playing whatever team Adams has played for, and the last one being the Seahawks, obviously, and really had a lot of good things to say about Adams ahead of that 2021 game. But once again, this is a guy in Jamal. Look, he's still under 30. Now look, his free agency value is going to be very, very, very tamped down this offseason because he hasn't played a complete season going back to, I think, his second year in the league, which I think was, 2018. There's a lot of 12-game seasons in there. And then, once again, the last two seasons with Jamal Adams, a total of just 10 games, has had shoulder and, concussion last year. And, I mean, just various injuries. But when healthy, I mean, that's a guy that can definitely roam and play in the box for sure. And the blitzing capabilities that he has. Long story short, if the price was right, and I mean, it would really have to be probably in that, I don't know, 3-4 million per year range, I think the Steelers could have interest in there. And especially with, I mean, look, who are the safeties they have, the strong safeties they have under contract right now? DeMonte Casey and Keanu Neal. Would a healthy Jamal Adams be an upgrade over those two, I guess, would be the big question.
Sure, I think he would be, but when healthy is the optimum phrase that you used. And I think it's hard to trust that health aspect at this point. And wasn't he a healthy scratch at one point last year? There was some weirdness, I think, happening with Seattle. Maybe I'm misremembering the situation, but I thought around that Steelers game in week 17, there was something going on with Jamal Adams where they thought he was going to play and he was scratched and something happened.
Yeah, I don't remember the specifics of it. All I know is he was, he had that concussion, then the sideline with the independent,
Right.
I'd have to go back and look at that. He was inactive, he was on IR for, I think, at that point for the game against the Steelers, wasn't he? Because I don't even think he was on the inactive list. I don't think he was on the 53 when the Steelers faced the Seahawks there late in the season.
Yeah, I don't know if it was that game in particular, but it was around that time, I think. I vaguely remember something about Adams thinking he was going to play and then not playing and being either not activated or scratched or whatever the case was. And there was also, not that it matters a lot, but a little bit of weird Twitter drama with him last year, trying to smack talk this Jets reporter that criticized him back when, and just some weirdness there. But yeah, I mean, in his prime, I mean, he was a great strong safety. A Pro Bowler, I mean, 9.5 sacks in 2020, which is just a ridiculous number. And you pulled, comments from Mike Tomlin that praised Adams around that time. But I think in a strong free agent safety market, there are probably some other alternatives I would consider.
And that's the tag on to this discussion here. It feels like this almost feels like this every year, doesn't it? The safety free agent group is probably going to swell a little bit here and already did a little bit more yesterday, I think, as well, too. So if the Steelers, long story short, if the Steelers want to attack another safety option, a box safety, a strong safety type here over the course of the next several weeks, there are probably going to be a couple options out there to go after.
There are, and we'll talk about those here briefly with my kind of free agent wish list. I know people have asked me for a couple weeks now about free agent options and people that I would consider, and I hadn't taken much time because I was focused on combine and draft mode, but I have done wish lists for offense and defense. We'll talk about those in just one moment. One other piece of news I'll fit in before we get to free agent talk is our Blues Clues days are back. The pro days have started post-combine. Kind of piecing together what the pro day schedule looks like. Don't have an official list yet, but we have our first spotting of scouting coordinator Casey Weidel at the Indiana pro day yesterday. Weidel, yeah, brother of assistant GM Andy Weidel, been with Pittsburgh since 2022. After Omar Khan and Weidel were promoted and hired respectively. And so he was at that pro day. Not that it's the biggest pro day in the world, but there's interesting names there. There's a linebacker, Aaron Casey, had a really strong 2023 season, had 20 tackles for a loss and a bunch of sacks, a couple of forced fumbles. So that's a guy whose tape I actually want to dig into.
It's that time again, ain't it?
It is.
And I think we have what I think we're slowly trying to cobble together the pro day calendar. There's bits and pieces all over the place that we're having to look at for that information. But I believe the Northwestern pro day is today, so I imagine at some point you will be Blues cluing that to see if they find any Steelers personnel at that. And I think Purdue is Thursday, and who did I say is Friday? Illinois.
I believe you said Illinois. Yeah, a lot of the Big Ten happening.
All right. So it's that time of year again.
All right. So we'll keep you posted on that. We'll have a pro day tracker once we kind of get a couple more lists of names and places and people, and we'll pass those along to you because we love checking out. Not that it always means everything. We just like to know it's part of the battle, but also obviously there's any positional coaches or any kind of higher ups. That becomes very important information when it comes to our pre-draft process and predictions.
Absolutely.
All right, Dave. So just mentioned a moment ago.
And it's a contest.
Yeah, it's just kind of the fun of the chase, I guess, so to speak. Right. All right, Dave. I had my free agent wish list, and wish list kind of, in a sense, to some degree, a misnomer. Some of it's based on people that I do want and do believe that will be a great signing for Pittsburgh. Some of it's based on just past connections and pre-draft interest or scheme fit or, you know, financial reasons, guys that kind of economically will scratch a Steelers itch, so to speak. So we'll start here with the offense. Now, the offensive list with the names that I put here are pretty bland. I'm the first to admit that, but I have said for a little bit now and still believe that Pittsburgh's free agency approach, broadly speaking, will be defensive heavy, that they'll focus on offense in the draft, defense and free agency. And I say that largely because of the strength of what's available in terms of the depth at center and tackle and receiver in the draft and the strength at inside linebacker and safety in free agency. They'll, of course, do both. They'll have some offensive free agent signings and some defensive draft picks, obviously, but just kind of big picture. That's my view on things. That's why the offensive list is less impressive than the defensive list. Having said all that, Dave, for the veteran quarterback options here, kind of the names that we've talked about, but some new ones as well. Sam Darnold, I think, would make sense, the pedigree, a guy that can come in and I think really be that strong competition that the Steelers are looking for. Drew Locke, similar story to Darnold, first round pick, didn't work out, gets traded. Brissett in Washington, Ryan Tannehill. And how about Easton Stick, considering his connection with Tom Arth? He was with the Chargers last year, then Arth now the Steelers quarterback coach. Don't know if I would love Stick as a number two, maybe ideally a really kind of top end number three. But that's one name to mention because of that Chargers connection.
That's an interesting dot connection. I'm laughing because when you released your offense free agent wish list a couple of days ago, and people, I think we need to come up with a new term of wish list because it's not actually, you know, people are probably wondering what did Alex wish for his birthday? A pet?
My Christmases were not great. Yes. The old pair of socks. I'll take it. Thank you, Mom.
Yeah. Brown socks is what Alex would wish for Christmas here. More than anything, need to clarify that, you know, once again, this isn't so much a wish list as it is a what you view as a realistic kind of plan, I guess, overall. And I do, you can't have one of these without you putting Jacoby Brissett on.
Yeah, just every year. I just copy and paste last year's.
How many years in a row has Jacoby Brissett been on this thing? But I think it's realistic, especially, I mean, look, we talked about Ryan Tannehill's maybe a potential add as a backup. I think Jacoby Brissett could potentially fit that. Maybe even a guy like definitely Sam Darnold and Drew Locke, if you want to talk about cheap, veteran, you know, semi-experienced guys that could, I guess, be viewed as competition overall. Those names fit. You know, when you get past the Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, you know, all those other names there. Easton Stick, I'm with you. I would view more as a QB3 option there, but there's no denying of the dot connecting, especially with Tom Arth and his time in Los Angeles there. So I understand why you have these names on here.
And Stick was the number two, I believe, with the Chargers last year, backing up Herbert and got four starts out of it. So he was a number two somewhere. Do I think he's ideally number two? No. And would he really be competition for Pickett? No. That's why I say he's not really a number two in my mind for the situation Pittsburgh would find themselves in. And this all assumes, again, their first mission will be to re-sign Mason Rudolph. But failing that, these are the alternatives I think that they would be turning to.
Understood.
Now, some people, again, the criticism I got that you kind of, you know, mentioned is that there are no really big names on here. But my response to that is, what position do you think that they would sign a big name for? Quarterback, they're not going to go sign a Kirk Cousins. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Running back, they're not going to do anything there. Tight end, I mean, in terms of big name signings, running back, no. Tight end, no. Receiver, I guess you could argue that, but I don't know who that name would be in a really good draft class. Why go spend a bunch of money on a receiver? Offensive tackle, I get it, but who's that name? Trying to find that name right. That fits, I really couldn't. I mean, you had mentioned Jonah Williams, but I, you know,
that's pricey. Yeah, and that would probably set a new record, which we'll talk about a little bit here, as far as average yearly value and guaranteed money when it comes to the Steelers dating back the last 10 years. So that would be an outlier, and plus on top of it, kind of a depressed tackle free agent class once you get past the top. You know, two names on it. So with that, Jonah's probably going to get attention out there and land somewhere else other than Pittsburgh, quite honestly.
And again, with a great, just a stupid good draft class at tackle with a bunch of right tackles, why go spend a bunch of money and overpay in free agency when you could go draft somebody is my argument to that. Guard, no. The only one I think you can really argue is center, and that's fair. There are some names out there. But if you're on the Jackson Powers Johnson train or the Zach Frazier bus, you're not going to go sign a center making $6 million per year because he's going to be your starter. So could they do that? Yes. And I mentioned those names briefly. And Andre James from the Raiders, I think, is one option if they wanted to go that center route. People have mentioned Aaron Brew from Tennessee, given his connection to Arthur Smith. They were together in with the Titans when Smith was the OC there. So that is possible. But I think it's more likely they go through the draft. And that's why I focused more on lower to mid-tier type of veteran types as opposed to that slam dunk starter.
You know, you mentioned Brewer, and I think it's a name that's been brought up not only by us, but you know, several others as well, as trying to you know, draw the connections and all. And who is my buddy, real good contract and salary cap guy that probably doesn't get enough run on Twitter and all like that? Daniel Salib. I've had some conversations with him about contracts over came across him, I think, last year about this time and all like that. Real knowledgeable as far as contracts and projecting contracts and all like that. He is working with the guy at Texans Cap, who also does a very good job with the cap, covering specifically the Texans. And I think that guy also does some work for Over the Cap as well, too. He released a and it's worth signing up for. If you go over to the Texans, if you go over to Texans Cap Twitter feed and then follow their links to kind of their what are all the kids doing now with the sign up newsletters? I forget which platform
this Substack. Is.
Yeah, I think maybe a Substack or something along those lines. They released released a list of like 101 top free agents and the contract predictions along with it. Long story short, he has Aaron Brewer listed at 50th overall on his list. And the projection that Salib has for him is 3 years, $24 million. Mm. And the reason I bring up you know, a guy like Salib is this. You know, you bring up the name Pro Football Focus, and sometimes we reference them as contract predictions, and I think as a whole that they do a decent job on that. But, you know, Pro Football Focus, you throw out the name Pro Football Focus, some people just automatically turn their nose up and say, I don't want to hear about Pro Football Focus. So within that, try to go alternative, you know, views and predictions and all like that. Once again, I think Salib does a fantastic job overall. Especially, look, I wouldn't want the task of going through 100. I love contracts.
You would. I think you would love that.
Maybe at some point down the road, post Steelers Depot days, Alex. Maybe, but not now. I don't mind someone throwing out a name and then me deep diving that individual name and then throwing out a prediction maybe that way. But I'm not going to take on doing the whole league and I let other guys do that. Guys that I think are very reputable. And once again, I think Salib is anyway, Brewer, he has 3 years, $24 million, which is an $8 million APY. $12 million fully guaranteed at signing, which is basically 50% of the contract. That sounds about right overall. He goes on to say a handful of free agent centers signed deals in the 5 to 6 APY range last year, and he expects Brewer to receive a deal just above that tier after accounting for cap inflation. So, long story short, I don't think I don't think he's off by much. And then that $8 million APY, that would put the Steelers being all in on a guy to be their starter, and thus probably a reason to think that Brewer will not be headed to Pittsburgh.
I mean, he could. It just says if you're doing that, you're not drafting the center position early. And I think they have a desire to draft that position. I think they've been looking for that draft pick the way they drafted Maurkice Pouncey to be that real anchor for hopefully the next 10 plus years. Now, there's a risk in, going into the draft without a great option, and you want to make sure that you can get that guy. You never know what the draft is going to bring. I understand that, but you're going to do that with some position. You're not going to fill all your holes, ideally, in free agency. Does he have a projection on Andre James, what he's going to get? Will he get more than Brewer, or less, or about the same?
Let me see.
I don't know if you're
here.
Able to pull that up, because I know, I mean, James was interesting back with the Raiders because they moved on from Rodney Hudson. I think they even gave James an extension before he barely ever had even played. And I don't know if he quite lived up to the billing with Las Vegas and now a free agent, but still relatively young. And I think he's a decent athlete. So I'm just curious what that price tag would be on him.
He does, and he has him listed 58th overall. What did I say? Brewer was at 50th overall. He has Andre James 58 on his list. And once again, if you get a chance, run over there and sign up for that newsletter, and you can view all this online and support them, because there's a lot of work that goes into this, and I think Salib has done a fantastic job on this. He has Andre James 58th overall, final projection, 3 years, $21 million. $7 million APY. So he has Brewer at 8, James at 7. He has $11 million fully guaranteed at signing for Andre James, which would be slightly more than 50% of the contract. So this is yet another name that the Steelers went down this route. If indeed these projections are close or right on the money, that they'd be saying this is our starting center.
The three centers I have on my list, which are definitely low-tier type of options, Matt Hennessy from the Falcons, the Arthur Smith connection. Now, Smith was not there when Hennessy was drafted. That was the year before Smith was hired by Atlanta, but of course was with him his entire tenure. Did not play last year due to injury. It's going to make him cheap overall. Reportedly, way back in 2020, there was a report from Tony Pauline that Pittsburgh had serious interest in Hennessy. Of course, did not actually draft him. But maybe they circle back based on that reported pre-draft interest.
Okay.
And then also mentioned Danny Pinter. I think he's a really good athlete, former tight end who bulked up at Ball State and has played a little bit for the Colts. Again, also injured last year, broke his ankle in August. Going to make him cheap, 27 years old. But if he could still move, still be athletic, that'll fit in the zone system that Smith is expected to run. And then somebody who did play last year, Lucas Patrick from Chicago, to not have a particularly good year, I fully admit that, but just kind of real experience, lower level guy that'll be a bridge and placeholder of sorts until you go draft that center. Can also play guard, so he can be a backup swing guy and have some versatility there. So that's one name to mention as well.
Of those three, who would you would Hennessy be your shot?
In terms of who I think they would actually sign?
Yeah.
Yeah, just because the doc connecting is so easy, the reported interest, and of course the Smith connection. I think Pinter seems really interesting as a scheme fit, but you don't know where he's at exactly with that broken ankle. I assume he'll be good to go. Maybe you wonder about how mobile he'll be coming off of that, but only 27, hasn't played a ton of football. I think Pinter would be an interesting name to consider.
All right, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about him, but run through your running backs and fullbacks.
Yeah, the running backs, number three is wide open right now. I think they could go sign a low-level running back. Smith, whether he likes depth and versatility, and of course you need somebody to play on special teams. So DJ Dallas from Seattle, Trayvon Williams from Cincinnati, those guys have done special teams work and kick return work and coverage work. That's going to be important. But Ty Johnson from Buffalo, Pittsburgh brought him in for a visit back in 2019. He's got size from Maryland, bounced around a bit, but played on special teams. And I could see him coming in on a one-year deal for essentially the minimum.
All right. Reasonable list.
And then fullback. I got some love here on the fullbacks. Keith Smith from Atlanta, spent his entire tenure with Arthur Smith in Atlanta the last 3 years, although he's turning 32 and that's getting to be too old to really, justify rostering him. But how about Jacob Johnson from the Raiders? He's the guy that was lead blocking for Josh Jacobs in 2022 when he ran for, 1,600 yards, I think it was. So kind of a true and blue lead blocker. It's not touched the ball much, but plays on special teams. And yeah, 26 or 29 years old, I believe he is. So somebody younger. And I think that's a realistic option.
All right. I understand the dot connecting there. Wide receiver, one of them we've already talked about. You wrote an article about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Matt Collins, a guy that can play special teams, kind of be upgrade over Miles Boykin. And then I should have double-checked the pronunciation on this, but Olamide Zaccheaus from Philadelphia. He was in Atlanta from 2019 to 2020 with Arthur Smith, and Smith had repeatedly called him one of his favorite players. He's dependable, smart, can play multiple spots, undersized, but can play on special teams as well. So that could be a low-level flyer. And then this one, I'm not even sure how much I personally love it, but just to put a different name out there, Laviska Shenault from Carolina, has not worked out in the NFL. I might move him back to actually play full-time running back. He was kind of a hybrid guy coming out of Colorado. He's got some power, but just kind of a real, real like veteran minimum benefit almost kind of situation with Shenault.
He was like the Debo Samuel prototype that didn't.
Yeah, that didn't become Debo Samuel. Yeah.
All right. For a want list of brown socks, I mean, it's not a bad list.
But you need some socks. Like, everyone needs socks. Like, right. They're not flashy, but you got to have some of these guys. And I think these are all realistic and sensible.
Can I make a suggestion? We call this the brown sock list annually moving forward.
I don't know if it'll get clicked on as much if I call it the brown sock list.
All right.
Under advisement, we'll take that consideration. All right, let's talk about some more interesting names, though, defensively, because, again, I do think that they can spend some money, and we'll spend some money defensively here. D-line, I had a tougher time finding real good D-line options more than I thought that I would. But the one, I think a reader had suggested this a while back, and it made a ton of sense. So credit to them, Javon Kinlaw.
We also had it on the live stream the other night, too.
Yeah. Javon Kinlaw from San Francisco, former first-round pick. Pedigree, he's got ideal size. Health has been an issue throughout his career. He's not panned out as the former first-round pick of the 49ers, but 3.5 sacks last year, had his best season. He's versatile. Should be relatively cheap. To me, this is like a real true box checking situation for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, pedigree. It's the kind of guy that they go after depressed value, see if they can get the most out of him. And as you know, someone had thrown the name out, as we mentioned in the live stream the other night, you could definitely see this being a guy that they potentially make a cheap play for.
Yeah, and will not be expensive. I mean, he's going to cost, I had speculated, and it's just really, this stuff better than I do, but 2 years, 8 to 10 million, something like that, because he is still relatively young. Maybe that's even shooting too high. I'm not sure, but that's what I put there on Kinlaw.
Salib, by the way, has him number 76 on his list.
Okay.
1 year, $6 million with a maximum value of $8 million, $4 million fully guaranteed at signing. If the Steelers went after a guy like that with a APY of, let's say, $5 to $6 million, they would probably try to attack it on a 2 year deal.
Right. I guess I wasn't too far off kind of framing that 2 years, $10 million. That sounds, I was in the ballpark for that. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense there. Some other names, Deshaun Hand from Miami. He's bounced around some. He played over 200 snaps, almost 200 snaps for the Dolphins last year, graded out well against the run. Notre Dame as well for the size aspect, but also went to Alabama and was coached by Carl Dunbar, the Seagulls defensive line coach. So there's one connection there. That should be a really cheap signing, even less than Kinlaw. And then Justin Jones from Chicago has kind of been more tackle than end, but he has played both and had 4.5 sacks last year, 27 years old, just trying to find some younger names. I mean, you could, I also mentioned Quentin Jefferson because he's a local kid. He's productive. He is 30 years old and you're trying to get younger because your D-line with Hayward and Ogunjobi are 30 plus club. But if you did want to go with one veteran route and kind of make an exception here, Jefferson, you know, for the production, the size, and being a Woodland Hills kid, that does make sense.
All right. I understand them. When you got the off-ball linebacker, you became the SpongeBob. Write that down. Write that down. You got a long list here.
I did. Again, I think it's a really interesting off-ball linebacker class. And I know I've been somebody that has been saying to go draft somebody and stop free agent signings. But if the class is good, the class is good. And you have to be dictated by the talent that's out there. So I just kind of run through a bunch of names here. They're all in similar buckets. Kenneth Murray from the Chargers, Jordan Brooks from the Seahawks. We mentioned Jerome Baker, now officially or had reported to be released, if not officially so. Zach Bond from the Saints, Blake Cashman from the Texans, Frankie LaVu from Carolina. And this one, I don't know if I would love, but I could see Pittsburgh having the interest in Devin White of Tampa Bay. And I thought he was going to command more money than that. I don't know if there's a projection on him from the Texans cap, but I think PFF had him at $7 million per year on Devin White. And, you know, the big debate in 2019 was the two Devins, Devin Bush and Devin White. You know, who could Pittsburgh get? Who did they like more? Who would pan out? White's had a better career than Bush. I don't think either have been exactly what the teams had hoped that they would be. Bush obviously was not, but you know, could there be that pre-draft interest that lingers, and could they take a swing with Devin White?
Salib has him number 74 overall on his list, and he writes, Devin White has not lived up to the bill since the Buccaneers took him fifth overall in the 2019 draft, and that's putting it nicely. Devin White's production has largely been a product of volume, but he has 566 tackles, 23 sacks. Does he really have 23 sacks? Three INTs through his first 5 years. White is probably looking for a change of scenery and free agency, and some teams will be willing to take a chance on the talented 26-year-old. His final projection is 1 year, $6 million, with a maximum value of $9 million, $4 million fully guaranteed at signing he has. Once again, if you're talking about a player, probably with more than a $5 million APY when it comes to the Steelers, they probably would be looking at it, trying to do a multi-year deal with him to keep that first-year cap number down. And then that way further justifies fully guaranteed at signing, which if they gave him a $4 million signing bonus, that would cover the guaranteed portion there.
Gotcha. So a name that I'll be watching to see where he ends up. Also, I want to mention Oren Burks from San Francisco. I've been a fan of Burks. He's bounced around a bit, was in Green Bay with the 49ers this past year. I like his game. Always kind of been a fan. The only complicating factor is Greenlaw with the torn Achilles he suffered in the Super Bowl. Will they be more tempted to re-sign somebody like Burks given the uncertainty about Greenlaw? But if he does hit free agency, I think Burks is a athletic cover guy.
All right. Good long list of off the ball linebackers there.
And I think that, you know, I know that they interviewed the guys at the combine and they could go the draft route. I still don't think that off ball linebacker class is great. And there are other needs and other talents in the draft. I think that they're going to go and add another name to that free agent list, because there's so many names they could go sign. I don't think they're going to pass up all these names I just mentioned.
I think just when it comes to off the ball linebacker in the draft, I do think however, there are a couple of names in that group that would be fits, you know?
Yeah, there are for sure. I also think I should kind of use this understandingly. It is hard to evaluate off ball linebackers in college because they're undersized and they're playing in more open systems, and Pittsburgh demands so much from the position. I mean, it can be hard to really evaluate how that guy's going to make the jump. And if you get a veteran that you have NFL tape on and have a better feel of how he'll fit in, and listen, I mean, as I mentioned, I think last week, Omar Khan did a really good job of improving the inside linebacker room through free agency last year. When everybody was healthy for that span of time of Holcomb and Alexander and Roberts, all free agents brought in. That was a really good group that was solid, not spectacular, but they were good. They made splash plays. And so that gives me some optimism that it seems like at least from last year, Omar Khan, this organization knows what they're looking for when it comes to off-ball linebackers. And that maybe would give me some hope they could go find that name again in 2024.
Okay.
All right, moving on to corner now. And there are some names out there. And of course, you can mention the top names, but they've now been tagged in L'Jarius Sneed and Jalen Johnson. How about Sean Murphy Bunting from Tennessee?
We've talked about him, I think, haven't we?
We have. Pre-draft visitor in 2019, started a bunch of games for Tennessee last year. Good athlete coming out. I think he could be a number two corner, assuming that Porter will be the number one, which he will, and shadow top receiver. So that's one name that I think, you know, is going to be, I don't know if he's on that list. He should be pretty, you know, relatively cheap. I don't know, $5-6 million per year wouldn't preclude you from drafting a corner, but I think Murphy Bunting, given the pre-draft connection, a name to certainly watch.
I am not seeing him on Salib's list of 101.
Okay. But I think that would signal then he'll be projected to be relatively. What is the projection for number 101 on that list? Hopefully it's not something like a kicker or punter that's going to be harder to judge. But if we assume that he'll get less than 101, then I'd be curious to kind of know where that bar is at.
Well, and I guess these do kind of go by values here. Number 101 on his list is Raekwon Davis from the Dolphins, who he has at 1 year, $3 million.
Okay. I mean, not that it's not a perfect way to look at that, I guess, but just to kind of ballpark it. I mean, but bottom line is, you know, they can afford somebody like Murphy Bunting. There's no question about that.
Sure. Sure. They definitely should be able to afford whatever he's looking for in free agency.
If Pittsburgh wanted to try to have a reclamation type of project, they could go with one of two names, CJ Henderson from Carolina and Jeff Okudo from Atlanta. A little Arthur Smith, tiny connection there, just to kind of get an idea on the person. Both were first round picks, both didn't work out with their drafted teams, both got traded. Okudo has more of the size Pittsburgh looks for. Henderson, a good athlete coming out of Florida. You know, Pittsburgh has a really good coaching group for the secondary. Mike Tomlin, former DB's coach, Charles Austin, DB kind of, you know, it's always been his wheelhouse, and Grady Brown, to me, one of the better DB coaches in football. So not saying that they would be guaranteed to start, and certainly, again, would not prevent you from drafting the position early. But if you want some depth, some rotational options, Henderson, Okudo, they make sense.
All right. You also have Kenny Moore and Isaac Yeldon from the Saints on here.
Yeah, more. I've always loved Kenny Moore.
You know, I have too.
In that Mike Hilton prime, the two top slot corners were Mike Hilton and Kenny Moore. And he doesn't turn 29 until August, so he's not even over that 30 kind of barrier, quote unquote, yet. If you want kind of a defined top slot corner, Moore is that guy. Now, if you sign him and you keep Peterson, I don't know exactly how the roles would fit and mesh and all that, but just kind of. That's a little bit more wishing, just because I think Moore's been a really, really talented player.
All right.
And then at safety, it's a really good safety class, Dave. And that's good for free agency, because the draft class, as you pointed out, is a really poor safety class overall. I think they should and they will sign a strong safety type. A bunch of names here: Taylor Rapp, Cameron Curl, which will be a very upper level kind of money. But if you want big swings, there's one for you. Julian Blackman from the Colts. I think Mike Edwards from Kansas City might be the guy. He had, I think, a visit with them, or had some interest coming out of the draft, played in Kansas City last year, had a solid season, probably a, you know, $6 million type of guy. Mike Edwards, to me, somebody on my radar.
All right. Yeah, I think a guy like Curl could end up commanding some pretty decent money.
Yeah, reports are always going to make a lot. And I also mentioned Kyle Duggar. I had him on my list before the transition tag was used. But, I mean, that is a really fun player to watch. He's got size. He's got ball skills. He flies all over the field. He's 27 years old. He can rush the passer. I mean, there is no downside to putting an offer on Duggar. I mean, I guess the only one is you're kind of in a holding pattern to see what happens if the Patriots match it. But if you hypothetically signed him, there is no compensation that would have to be given up because – they put the transition tag on him.
Salib has him at number 28 on his list, at 3 years, $37.5 million, 12.5 APY. So that would be definitely be a hefty swing on the Steelers' part. And then once again, you go through the rigmarole of signing him to an offer sheet and doing all the are you going to end up negotiating the contract for the Patriots?
Sure. And they have the cap space to match it. So that, I guess that it, I, I, take back my statement. There was a downside to kind of almost maybe wasting your time, but he's a really good player.
And when you look at the fully guaranteed too, is he a guy that's going to be looking for guarantees outside of year one? And if the offer sheet that you put together does not include guarantees outside of year one, and it's still a very manageable APY and structure, you know, let's say just a typical Steelers structure, that would make it even more attractive for a team like New England to, okay, thank you for doing our work for us.
Yeah, that's a good point. Fair point there. But point is, I think they can spend some money here. They should spend some money here, get a defined strong safety, allow Minka to play less in the box overall. I just thought last year, even before all the safeties went down, it was a little messy of this rotation with Casey and Neal. I want to have a more defined name, the way that Edmonds and Minka were defined. It became a really consistent duo that could build chemistry and knew each other really well. And if you do sign a strong safety for decent money, I think you go ahead and cut Keanu Neal. It's going to help offset that a tiny bit, not much, but a little bit on the back end of that move.
Yeah, I think, and we still got a couple of days till the start of the new league year, this safety market could flood a little bit more.
Yeah, and I mean, as you said, it's typically been devalued in comparison to corners. I mean, you can get a safety.
Especially box guys too, right?
Right, right. So, I mean, again, Curl's going to make some money. Duggar's on the tag. But if you wanted to get a Taylor Rapp or I think a Blackman or Edwards, it's going to be pretty cost effective.
Okay.
And then I got to mention the punters. I really, if you want my one prediction for free agency, they're going to go sign a veteran punter, like a good starter, like clear cut. You know, this is going to be your punter in 2024 and beyond. And if I'm Pittsburgh, I am going after Tommy Townsend. I will make him the highest paid punter in football. That'll be at least $4 to $5 million per year. I am good with that all day long. So I have Townsend on this list, Braden Mann, and the Browns kid with the last name I really can't pronounce that you tried valiantly the other day on the live stream that I will not make that attempt of. But he's a guy that kicked in cold weather his whole career, and that would make some sense in Pittsburgh.
Let me play devil's advocate here when it comes to Steelers and hierarchy here. And okay, Specifically when you look at average yearly value and a guy, let's say Chris Boswell, who has an APY at $5 million, are you going to upset the kicker room hierarchy by bringing in a punter making more than your guy in Chris Boswell? And how could that play into this?
Well, I love the show because you will not find these conversations anywhere else on any other podcast. It's just, this is the only place.
And I guess you, Alex and I are in agreement on a lot of things overall. We have the same perspective, basically based on historical aspects of what this team does and what the team could do. And I guess if you say, oh, Alex and Dave really went at each other today, this would be the level of how they go at each other. You know, I
get your point. You're not wrong.
I throw it out as a sounding board, you know, as part of the discussion. It would be easy for me to say, yeah, I agree 100% with Alex on this. And look, it would not hurt my feelings for this team to attack and have a good punter, especially with, you know, is this offense going to put up a lot of points regardless of who's at quarterback in 2024? We saw that this team has struggled with the punter position the last several years there. They need somebody that can flip the field they need a more consistent punter, period. You know, what was one of the things Mike Tomlin, all not consistent enough. JV.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, those kind of things there. So I guess my only pushback when it comes to a guy like Tommy is, you know, are you going to mess up the APY hierarchy? I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that probably needs to be part of the conversation.
No, you're right. Now, his APY, Boz, as you said, was five. Was it 5 point something or just straight five?
No, it's five. It's five.
The highest paid punter on an average yearly value basis right now is Michael Dixon at 3.674. That was signed a couple years ago, so the market, I think, has shifted upwards. Could you theoretically get Townsend at 4.999 on a three-year deal. You know, that might be the way. You still make him the highest punter in football by a wide margin and not upset the apple cart that you referenced. So that I think is plausible.
Right. And that's a good pushback by you by looking at the punter APY list, which you are, according to Over the Cap, Michael Dixon at 3.674. So you could come in and make Tommy Townsend the highest paid punter in the NFL at a million more than Dixon and still be less than a guy like Boswell. So,
right. So that's the way I guess I would frame it overall. Right. But I do think they signed somebody a punter because, I mean, they had to have been so frustrated with their punting the last couple of years. And, you know, I know they have optimism about their offense, but they have to know they're not going to have a top five offense. They need a good field flipper and somebody that can play good defense, because your punt is your first defense. That's your first line of defense. Mm-hmm. And that'll help out Pittsburgh's defense, the actual defense, even more. So I think they will go sign somebody, and Townsend will be top of my list. I mean, just watch the Super Bowl. I mean, he was just crushing the football. I mean, he was MVP until Mahomes took over. So the value of punter can be huge.
Okay. I award 2 points to Alex.
All right. My list overall, I mean, the offense, defense, I think, again, defense is more exciting. I think they're going to spend more defensively than offensively. And then you go to the draft and you load up on offense, at tackle, at center, receiver, whatever you feel like you have to address there. Any other thoughts, any names that you would mention, any free agent names you've kind of kicked around that you think would make sense?
Oh, I had, I have been kind of watching that Javon Kinlaw name. So I think that's, one that would have been on my list there. Once again, I think people need to be in, have the perspective here of, it's not so much a wish list as much as it is what this team has done and what kind of fits and what the needs are. Yes, we would all probably love them to go out there and get the top tackle, but just the odds, where we think this team will add positionally are on defensive side of football, potentially defensive line, corner, off the ball linebacker, and safety, correct?
Yeah, I think, that's almost all of them besides edge, but yeah, I think they're going to spend money potentially in any one or multiple of those areas.
All right. On the offensive side of football, it would potentially be center, maybe a fullback, maybe a low level tackle, extremely low level tackle, and maybe a number three-ish type wide receiver.
And quarterback, of course, if they do not resign Mason Rudolph. Yeah. Right. And these lists are a little bit on the longer side. And I do that intentionally, A, to be thorough, and B, recognizing that some of these players will not hit the market. Some of them will be re-signed. And so you want to have kind of a longer list of names than just three or four, and then watch them all get re-signed before March 13th. Then, your list just whittles away to nothing. So some of these names, of course, will not be actually available for Pittsburgh.
Right. And Bunting is another name that I think we've been discussing for a little bit that probably would have been on a list that I would have drawn up.
Yeah. So that is the list. And so kind of really switched into free agency mode. I have my mock off season for Friday. Fingers crossed. It's been done in terms of me completing the exercise. I just have to write the whole dang thing out. And this year, it was an interesting mock off season for GM Alex, Dave. I'll put it that way.
All right. Look forward to that. Shall we talk about historical aspects of the Steelers during the what we would call the CFA period of free agency? And the CFA period is defined as the unrestricted free agent period that begins at the start of the new league year and ends at 4 p.m. New York time on the Monday following the NFL draft.
Yeah, let's do it. Take it away, Dave.
All right. I pulled the data from going all the way back to 2014. So that's 10 off seasons worth of data here. And once again, this list does not include street free agents. In other words, guys that, maybe were cut around the league that the Steelers end up signing. This list does not include guys like Gunnar Olszewski, who was an untendered restricted free agent. These are unrestricted free agents signed by the Steelers during the, what they call the CFA period, which really stands for compensatory free agent qualified guys during that span. And if you want to look back over the 10-year span dating back to 2014, the most expensive add that the Steelers have had when it has come to an unrestricted free agent during that signing period right now is James Daniels at 8.83 APY. And he was given guaranteed money as part of that 3-year deal of $8.75 million. And obviously that happened a couple of off seasons ago. If you cycle back to last off season, the big add by this team unrestricted wise during the CFA period was Isaac Seumalo at $8 million per average per year with $6.95 million. Guaranteed, and then kind of filtering down from there. Obviously, you had Mitchell Trubisky a couple of off seasons ago at 7.41 with $5.25 million guaranteed. Man, you can I take that back. You go back to Steven Nelson was $8.5 million APY in 2019 with $7.5 million. Guaranteed. So I think that would top Isaac Seumalo from last year. My apologies there. I think Daniels a couple of years ago, and then Steven Nelson, and then Isaac Seumalo as far as the top three overall. Dating back in a 10-year period. And man, you can go all the way back. We mentioned recently, do you remember 2014, Mike Mitchell, that 5-year, $25 million contract, obviously a $5 million APY way back then, and guaranteed money of $5.25 million. This list has, and I'll publish this with an article here pretty soon, 36 total names on it in total dating back to 2014. What does this tell us, and how does this play into this year? Obviously, with Omar Khan not having a long track record on him overall, you were still in that realm of, it'll be interesting to see what happened. I don't think you can pigeonhole Omar into a large corner just yet. However, I do think that it would, going back to talking about hierarchy and historically what this team does, could they top the James Daniels number this year of 8.83 million. I think that's plausible, especially with cap inflation and all like that. Are we expecting this number, the new high number, to come in around 16 million? I think that's pushing it, Alex, even for a guy with Omar Khan with no huge track record.
And the question would be, if they went that route, 16 million plus, who would that guy be? And I'm not really sure what that name is, especially with the top corners on the tag and Snead and Johnson.
Right.
I mean, just trying to even exercise this thing out. You know, is there a...
And even technically something like that would be a trade, you
right.
know, when talking about these tag guys. If we're looking at just straight up unrestricted free agents at this point. If they were to exceed that number of James Daniels, in other words, 9 million or more, basically, you would probably be looking at a tackle. You'd probably be looking at a corner.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it would be an off the ball linebacker or a defensive lineman.
I think there's a good chance they break the Daniels mark this year. It's not a huge number overall to beat, and I think Pittsburgh wants to be aggressive. They have the space to be aggressive, to warrant that, to make that happen, and they're tired of being so close, and they want to try to really build this thing forward.
It would be cornerback, more than likely, right?
More than likely. Safety, depending. I know the market is down a bit. I don't know what Blackman, I don't have the exact number, what he would cost. Curl would come in above that, I'm pretty confident. If they were to hypothetically sign a Cameron Curl, he would be above Daniels 8.83 eight and change number there. So defensively, for sure, potentially even, I mean, what if, I didn't put his name on the list, but some people have asked about Patrick Queen from Baltimore, considering Pittsburgh knows him well. I mean, he'll certainly, I think, be above that $8 million number.
What does Saleeb have?
That was my guess in terms of what he's going to be looking for.
3 years, $42 million, so a $14 yeah. million APY. I mean, that would be a swing. That would be a that would fill a hole. It would set new precedent as far as topping easily a guy like James Daniels for a few years ago. It would still also put him under that top five hierarchy of APY of currently under contract. Theoretically, if you sign him to a 3 year, $42 million, here's the thing. What's he going to be looking for fully guaranteed money outside of year one?
Sure.
That's going to be a huge talking point. The Steelers would probably have to come off of more than just the signing bonus to get something done. Saleeb has him as $25 million fully guaranteed at signing, which would essentially be almost the first two full years of the deal, you know, that way. Is something like that at its core at least plausible to discuss? I think the answer would be yes.
I think so too, although I didn't put him on the list because I think that gets into the less likely territory. That's a surprising thing that I think would happen. I can't say that it's impossible, but I think that you kind of get a little too dreaming at that point.
Look, if you're going to make a swing and it be at the off the ball linebacker and it be a young pedigree guy, and we're talking about not cornerback, on top of it, that would probably be the swing to take.
At corner, putting Snead and Johnson aside because they're on the tag, who are the top corners available? I'm looking at Mike Clay's list, who does a great job compiling. He's got Kendall Fuller out there as his top corner, and then Johnson, this was pre-tag, and then Kenny Moore, Steven Nelson, Stephon Gilmore, an old friend of Keller Witherspoon, pretty high on this list as well.
All right. Fuller, Saleeb has it 3 years, $33 million at 11 APY. So that would be doable.
That's a deal that Sutton got last year, wasn't it? 3 years, 33.
Something like that. Yeah. Let me see what else we have here. I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest Steven Nelson's not going to be back.
Based on his recent comments, safe to say.
Kenny Moore, 2 years, $15 million at 7.5. That would be doable, at least from an APY perspective. Gilmore's just so old, man.
Yeah.
One year, $7 million. That'd be like you signing Patrick Peterson last offseason, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see Gilmore being a possibility, and Witherspoon, we would not expect to return.
I'm going to go out on a limb and predict that Akella Witherspoon will not be back. What about Chidobe Awuzie? Two years, $10 million, $5 million APY. That could be doable.
Yeah, that's certainly doable. He got hurt, I think, a bit last year, but what's 20, going to turn 29 in May. Still played 15 games last year. Maybe it was 2022 I'm thinking of. I think he had come off a pretty serious injury, but seemed to bounce back. Yeah, Awuzie makes sense. Did they have any interest in him coming out? I don't recall them having known interest in him, obviously.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
But I was just trying to see what was the biggest, most expensive corner out there, and it sounds like it'll be Kendall Fuller. And how old will Kendall Fuller be? Is he going to be pushing 30 at this point? He just turned 29 last month.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you're talking swings, then I'm not going to say that's impossible.
All right.
All right. But your prediction, will they sign any free agent that'll top that James Daniels APY?
I think so. I think there's a chance of that.
I think so, too. I'll say they will. Where that comes from and who that is.
Will there be multiple that top that number?
No, I thought
maybe a couple of weeks ago there might be a chance, but after looking at an extended list and it maybe two, maybe you could get two over that number. It'd have to be probably corner. It would have to probably be corner and off the ball linebacker.
Yeah, I think you could see one that tops it, and then maybe two others that are in that, because Pittsburgh's kind of been sitting in that $6 to $8 million range the last couple off seasons with Holcomb and say Amalu and Daniels and Peterson being in that range as well. What did Miles Jack get? What was he? Was a 2-year deal.
What did it like?
Said 16 million.
16 million?
Yeah. So
he was a street guy. I want to clarify that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just putting that aside, just talking about the contracts they've been giving guys in free agency. And they've really kind of been sitting pretty firmly in that $6 to $8 million range. Again, the cap goes up, they have some space. I think one will top it. I think they'll get two more that are going to be in that $6 to $8 million range.
All right.
Any other thoughts on that?
We're not expecting them to go high. Do you expect this to be as busy technically as it was last year? Because if you look at it as a whole, especially during the CFA period there, the first Monday after the draft, man, you had Armand Watts, you had Keanu Neal, you had Isaac Seumalo, you had Landon Roberts, you had Patrick Peterson, you had Cole Holcomb, you had Nate Herbig. Jannard Avery was the year before that. But you did have Gunnar Olszewski, even though he was a restricted, untendered restricted guy. So you had a lot, you had quite the list of actual signings, last offseason, right?
You did. Yeah. This one I've gone back and forth on. Gunnar was the year before.
Yeah. 2022. So last year ended at, Armand Watts, Keanu Neal, Seumalo, Landon Roberts, Patrick Peterson, Holcomb, and Nate Herbig.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this because my first thought was, no, it won't be as busy because, you know, last year was the first full offseason that Omar Khan and Andy Weidel got to be in their GM, assistant GM roles. And you typically see that roster churn start in that first year as these guys kind of start building this thing in their vision. And so I thought, okay, year two, it might be a little bit more calm than that because you kind of have a basis of your roster built out. But I also think Pittsburgh has a ton of unrestricted free agents, not big names, but just roster churn at the bottom. A lot of guys that probably will not come back. And so could you see this slew of, you know, bottom end compete for a spot on the roster, you know, spots 45 through 55 get brought in? That's possible. So I think it'll be similar to last year. I think you might have one slightly bigger swing overall with a kind of a bunch of role players and hole fillers, so to speak, on the bottom of your roster.
All right.
Is that kind of your interpretation of?
Yeah, I mean, how many unrestricted free agents during the CFA period, not street free agents, we'll go ahead and add street to it as well too, I haven't looked at the list of potentially untendered restricted guys out there, but it's usually rare that you see something happen along the lines of a Gunner anyway. But regardless, what are we looking at by the first Monday first Monday after the draft in totality? Five
was the number in my head. I mean, if you map this out, quarterback, if Rudolph does not resign, a center of some sort, that's two. Defensively, they're going to add, I think, multiple pieces, inside linebacker, do something at corner, that's four.
Maybe
I think
you
go after safety, that's five. Maybe even comes in at six or seven. Okay. If they just add some lower level guys, I think there'll be some activity.
All right. Okay.
All right, Dave, any other final thoughts or anything else to talk about that we did not cover?
I think we hit it pretty hard. Welcome to our TED Talk.
All right. So again, Combine show on Friday. And of course, we'll do some more kind of free agency preview, which will carry into Monday, the first day of the legal tampering period. Dave, let's close out today's show with some reader emails.
All right. Seth Bergstein writes in, "Hey guys, it seems more and more likely the team is giving Pickett one more prove yourself year. Despite the fan base and media screaming at them to upgrade the position, they seem to believe in Pickett in the face of all that. So my question is, if KP starts 2024 and is the same guy, does Mike Tomlin have to face the music for failing to compete at the most important position? If Pickett is bad again," he says, "I think it will be really difficult for Mike Tomlin to justify the decision to play him. You just can't keep wasting years, no matter how, no matter how secure your job is. I think it can and should get ugly for MT if it plays out this way. Do you agree?" Look, if you're going to give, let's say Pickett is the guy and is the guy for as long as they, you know, for most of the season until, you know, until they decide maybe to bench him. Look, the whole organization needs to take a heart, needs criticism. If they stand on Pickett being their guy and they don't get an upgrade at the position, not just Mike Tomlin, I guess the, you know, he says, you know, if KP starts 2024 is the same guy, does Mike Tomlin have to face the music for that? I think everybody faces music for that.
What does that mean, though? I think they bear the responsibility of it, of course, but is Mike Tomlin going to get fired? No. I mean, he's going to get an extension this offseason. They're going to fire him 1 year into his extension and owe him all that money? I mean, it's just not going to happen.
I doubt it, yeah.
So, I mean, I agree with the comment in principle. I mean, I think you have to bear the responsibility of that. I mean, you're kind of, if this is the path Pittsburgh goes, which it seems to be, then, you know, you have to be accountable for how this thing turns out, good or bad. And if it's bad, then yeah, you're going to be criticized and should be criticized. We'll be the first to do that. I mean, I think they're in pretty murky waters trying to go this route right now. But in terms of what does it mean when you say it's going to get ugly? Yeah, it will from the media aspect, but, you know, Tomlin will tune that stuff out and he'll continue to be the coach of the Steelers.
I agree. Todd Gensel writes in the midst of the Deontay Johnson trade rumors, how much capital could someone actually get? This year's draft is completely loaded with top wide receivers, pushing Deontay's value down quite a bit, I would think, he writes. Why not just get a rookie on a rookie deal and save a ton of money? Just my thoughts. We could only get a fourth or a fifth round pick, I would think, for Deontay Johnson. I mean, we talked, you know, pretty heavily about this in that show the other day there. A team that wants Deontay, and as we mentioned the other day, probably a team that you know maybe would rather think that they're one experienced wide receiver away in their offense to maybe winning a Super Bowl, you know, as opposed to worrying about spending a draft pick and having to develop that player, yada yada. Look, if all you could get for Deontay is a fourth or fifth round pick at this point, man, I'm not dealing for no fourth or fifth round pick. I'll just tell you that, straight up. I'm not even probably trading Deontay for a third, to be quite honest with you, unless there's something happening behind closed doors that he's just being the horses, you know what, and just wants out, you know, which I would have to see proof of that. And I know there's some rumblings that maybe he's not liking the, you know, quarterback direction. Yeah, whatever. If it comes down to trading Deontay Johnson, and once again, I think if you trade Deontay Johnson, you're going to do that before March 16th, as we mentioned there. I'm not just doing it to get him out of the building for a fourth or fifth round pick.
Right, because you're down to one receiver without a great capital to help replace him with. I could see him going for a third. I can't really see him going for higher than that based on last year of his contract. He will be, you know, costly to re-sign coming off a down year. And I just listened to the way that, you know, opposing coaches and players talked about the Steelers offense last year. And some of this was due to Johnson missing the first month of the year after week one. But when they talked about like the top threats in the offense, they stopped mentioning Deontay Johnson. It was all about George Pickens and his big playability and catch radius and body control and the freak show kind of stuff. And so I think people kind of really have, when they think about the Steelers passing threats, Pickens has become kind of number one in teams' mind. And I just don't think they'll be. I like Deontay, good player. I want him in Pittsburgh as opposed to playing somewhere else in 2024. But I don't think the value will be there that Pittsburgh would be, as reported, at least be looking for to make a move. Because it sounds like, yeah, they'd be open to it, but they'd have to get a really good offer. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to be the case.
I agree. Austin writes in about Justin Fields. This is under the assumption Fields is on the Steelers roster or radar, as reported by Adam Schefter. He says, I think Omar is smart enough to offer a third or later pick for Fields. He's not a proven commodity with a heavy QB class plus Kirk. I don't think there will be any suitors left for him. Pittsburgh could get a huge discount. And pertaining to his fifth-year option, he writes, why can't Pittsburgh just extend him for a cheaper price like Green Bay worked out with Jordan Love? Kenny would have to get traded for a late day three, and the extension for Fields would have to be around $17.5 million. per his opinion. Once again, I mean, there's nothing to say that there's nothing to say that you can't trade for Justin Fields and sign him to an extension. But if you're Justin Fields, what are you willing to settle for? Also, if you're going to do an extension for Fields around $17.5 million, what's that guaranteed money look like? Is he just going to essentially, and plus you've got sight unseen in your own offense at that point. I mean, it gets kind of messy at that point. Now, my view is it goes back to kind of how we ended things the other day there. If you were able to trade for Justin Fields at a depressed compensation, it puts less onus on you to have to pick up the fifth year option on him, and then you could just let it see how it goes at that point. Now, on the flip side of that, by not picking up that, you would open yourself up to a boom or bust situation. But wouldn't that be fine anyway with the depressed compensation that you're giving him to get him? Should that end up being the case, you're essentially saying, show us you're a franchise quarterback, and if he shows you he's a franchise quarterback, then you have no issue tagging him next offseason and then trying to work out a long-term deal there. If he shows you that he's anything but a franchise quarterback, you're saying, well, we took a third round pick swing at him and it didn't work out, we're gonna have to move on, go different route, the quarterback position.
Yeah, I get all that. I mean, that makes sense. I think the problem is, what if he's neither? What if he's not terrible, but not a franchise quarterback, a good player, like shows some flashes, but has some mistakes and some negative plays. And it's kind of, okay, what do you do? Do you tag him? Do you try to do a long-term deal? If he's in that, good, but not great territory.
And we go through all this all again with six quarterbacks be going to Pittsburgh next offseason.
Right. So, I mean, we'll see. I think it will take some time for Fields to get dealt. I know they want to try to get him dealt ASAP. That's what, polls had said. I don't think they're going to get their wish. I think other dominoes, Kirk Cousins in particular, will have to fall before Fields figures it out. And if he doesn't go to Pittsburgh, he doesn't go to Atlanta, then I don't know where he's going. I'm still going to say the Giants and just make something up and just, call my shot on that. But point is, I think we'll be talking about this for a little while longer.
I tell you, there was that interesting article, I think yesterday on ESPN, about trying to connect the dots with Kirk Cousins to Atlanta, and reading that in its totality, it does make a lot of sense the way they connected those dots there. So, and I know I've said that my gut feeling up until this point has been Fields to Atlanta. But what if indeed Cousins is the guy going that ends up going to Atlanta? Where does that leave the Bears as possible suitors at that point? And do the Vikings come into play in their own division? I think the Bears and the Vikings have traded before, so I think there is something there. Does the domino then go Russell Wilson to the Vikings? Or do the Vikings come in play with Fields, and what does this do with potential, who are the team? If the Falcons are not in play for Fields, who winds up in play for Fields?
Well, that's the big question. And it really becomes an open question. I mean, at that point, the Pittsburgh talk will kick up even more in terms of the media speculation of things. So that's where Cousins goes. I mean, I don't know if the Bears have done a deal with Minnesota. I know Lions and Vikings had a deal with Hockenson, TJ Hockenson, the tight end, but like quarterback is a different level. The question is, though, if that's your best offer, do you trade him in division and say, we'll just go beat Justin Fields with Caleb Williams? I mean, that's a calculation. I mean, people said the Raiders, but you got Luke Getsy, the OC there, who worked with him in Chicago. I don't think that's a relationship that they want to go down again. I don't know. I don't know where he's going to go.
All I'm saying is, I guess it would be interesting to see if Cousins does indeed go to, because we went through that whole exercise. Adam Schefter saying on that podcast the other day about, it leaves you to wonder if Atlanta's out, who's left,
Sure. I think, but that's where, as you mentioned, Schefter said, some team will surprise and come out of nowhere. We'll be all blown away and go, oh my God, he's going to Washington. He's going to the Giants. Who saw this coming? That may be the conclusion.
All right. I'm tired of talking about it.
Amen.
Anything else? I think we got through some reader emails. I think we're about an hour and a half here on the show.
Yep, we'll wrap things up. Come back Friday. We'll have Jonathan Hightrader, Ross McCorkle, Joe Clark to talk Combine, their experience there. Great work and great information from those guys, and do some more free agency previews, maybe some predictions as well for that and for Monday's show and whatever else comes up along the way.
All right. Ended up being a good show today. Good topics there, especially when it comes to free agency. We got mostly away from the quarterback talk, which is good. All right. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. Follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Send him some brown socks, please. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button in the navigational bar, and go to PayPal, make a donation that way. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button, upright navigational bar, and follow the directions that way. So really looking forward to the Friday show. And until then, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.